Tonight, totally different subject. Well, I don't know if it's a new subject, but a totally different subject we're going to talk about. Of course, it's on the Parshas HaShavua. I'm going to ask a couple of questions, and Bezrat Hashem, I hope to answer it with one answer. Okay, first let's go into the tefillah of Ma'ariv. Some girls, when I was teaching today in seminary, so some girls told me they daven Ma'ariv. Most girls that don't, Ma'ariv is a rishus, and therefore most girls do not daven Ma'ariv, but they told me they do. Okay, so in Ma'ariv every night we say a tefillah like this. We say the following. V'hasar me'aleinu, Hashem should remove from us oyev, enemies, dever, disease, cherev, sword, rav, hunger, yagon, woe, pain. V'hasar satan milfaneinu u'me'achareinu. And Hashem should remove the satan from in front of us and from behind us. So we all understand what it means, the satan in front of us. That's the satan that tells us to do very bad or just little bad, but to do bad things. The satan is in front of you and is making you crazy. Do this wrong, do that wrong, do this wrong, do that wrong. So we ask Hashem, remove the satan, that he shouldn't bother me anymore. I don't want him to bother me anymore. He should leave me alone. Every night we say this tefillah. But what's the me'achreinu? What's the satan behind us? Where is there a satan behind us? Is that he's whispering from behind me? No, he's standing in front of me. He's telling me, do this avera. So what is the tefillah that we say every night before we daven ma'ariv? Then we go to sleep and we say, Hashem, listen, do me a favor and make sure you take away the satan from in front of me, but also get him away from in back of me. What does that mean? What is the meaning of a satan in back of you? What is that prayer? And most of the people I asked, what does that mean? They don't know. They say it every night. And I asked a couple of guys and I said, what does that mean? What does the satan do behind you? What does that mean? And they're like, I don't know, I just say it. And why do you say it at night? Why don't you say this tefillah in the morning by Shacharis? Why specifically at night before you go to sleep? You say, V'hasa satan milfaneinu me'achreinu, from in front of me and from behind me. So that's one question. Now let's go to this week's parasha. This week's parasha, Vayu Chayesara. This is the week of Chayesara, by the way. It's a very big week in Eretz Yisrael because this is the week where Avraham Avinu bought the Maaros HaMachpelah from Ephron and the Bnei Ches. And therefore, this week, all the Jews from all over Israel go to Hebron. They camp out there. They have thousands and thousands of people that come. And they all have different minyanim. And they're all in the Maaros HaMachpelah. It's amazing. It's very, very amazing this week. And it's very, very beautiful. This is because this is the week that he bought it. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of the story of the Maaros HaMachpelah. We're going to get to that in a moment. But Chayesara lived 127 years. 127 is separated. Instead of saying she lived 127, she lived 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years, says Rashi. When she was 20, she was like 100 in Averis. No, when she was 100, she was like 20. I'm sorry. In Averis, she had no Averis because a person is not judged in the Bezdin Shemaila until they're 20 years old. She was 100 years old. She wasn't being judged in the Bezdin Shemaila because she was perfect. When she was 20, she was as beautiful. She had the skin of a 7-year-old. So the Torah specifically breaks it up to 100 and to 20 and to 7. I'm going to give you a different reason why it breaks it up that way. Then the Torah goes on and tells us a story. Vatama Sarah v'Kiryas Arba. Sarah died in Kiryas Arba. He Chevron. That is Chevron. Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Israel, in the land of Canaan. Vayavo Avraham. And Avraham came, lispod, to eulogize. Eulogizing means when you go to a funeral, the rabbis and the family gets up and they say good things about the person, right? So Avraham got up and he eulogized Sarah, v'liv chosa, and he cried. Now, two questions. If you look in your chumash tonight when you get home, you will see that in the word liv chosa, the chaf is teeny. It's not the same size as all the other letters in that word. It's teeny little chaf. And the Mefarshim say the reason it's a teeny chav is because Avraham Avinu cried very little. So question number two is, why did Avraham Avinu cry very little? Are you telling me that he didn't have a good marriage? He didn't care that his wife died? If that's the case, that he didn't have a good marriage and he didn't care that his wife died, why would the Torah write that? That would be something that we wouldn't, that's not something to be proud of. We wouldn't go around and tell people that I just went to this funeral and the husband is not even crying. That's a nasty thing to say, right? He was crying, he loved her. But why did the Torah tell us and make a small chaf that we should all look at it and say, oh, he didn't cry a lot for her. Why didn't he cry a lot for her? So that's a question. And also, what comes first when you hear somebody died, chas v'shalom? Does the eulogy come first? Or does the crying come first? The crying comes first. You hear the bad news, you cry. Then you go to the funeral. The Pasuk says that he came, by Yahweh Avram, he came, lispod, he said a eulogy, vilim chosa, and after that he cried. That's not the normal order. So we're going to try to answer all these questions with one answer. And it's a very important subject that I'm speaking about tonight. So last week we learned in our shir that the whole thing that it looked like that he was killing that he was killing his own son really was a very good thing, because by doing the Akedah, Yitzchak's, well, I'll have to talk 2 seconds on this subject also. We talked about Yitzchak having a female neshama. Now I knew that would cause a lot of problems this past week. I like to cause problems, so I didn't mind saying it. So I got all kinds of very funny questions. Well, not funny questions, good questions. He was weird, you know, he had a female neshama, was he born weird? You know, and what does that mean? He put on makeup, he liked to wear women's clothes. What does that mean? The Zohar says he was born with a female neshama. And the answer is, it's not exactly what it sounds like. When we're talking about neshamas, where female and male, it's a little bit of a deeper thought. And the way the Zohar explains it is that a female neshama comes from a place in the other world that's called Din. And the male neshama comes from a place called Rachman. Now you're going to say, that's not true. Women have much more pity than a man has. Din is more black and white than Rachman. A woman, with all her emotions and everything else, she's not usually that impulsive. A man is like, yeah, you think it's good? Let's buy it. He jumps. He jumps, he jumps, he jumps. I like these friends. Okay, let's move. Okay, let's buy that house. Let's go to a new business. Let's change this. Let's change that. That's how guys are. That's not din. Din is, we have a house, let's stay here. Let's make it work. They're more grounded. Women are more grounded than men. Anyone who's married knows that. I don't have to tell you that. The women are more grounded than men. That is din. Not din meaning she's meaner than a man. That's not what it means. But what the Zohar was talking about of a neshama de nukva, neshama de zikra, doesn't mean what you think, female and male, whatever that means. But a man who has that neshama of din from that part cannot have children for whatever reasons. So therefore, what we spoke about last week, that he had to go through the Akedah so that his neshama, his female neshama left him and he got the male neshama so that he could have children. So we went through the whole thing that Avraham Avinu needed the Akedah, Yitzchak needed the Akedah in order that the first Nevi'ah, the first prophecy that he would have children from Yitzchak would come true. We learned this last week. Well, that was a very important point. Now, the point that I want to make tonight to everyone sitting here, and it's important for everybody sitting here, is the following. And it's a little bit scary. It's the following. The satan that's behind you is like this. Before you do something good, the satan tries to stop you. This reason, that reason, he comes up with all kinds of crazy reasons. You beat him. You beat him. You wanted to do a mitzvah, you wanted to help somebody, but your friends called you and they want to go out, and you're like, should I go out or shouldn't I go out? Or I'll tell you the example I gave the seminary girls today. So here's a girl who, she used to not be very tzniyistic. And she went to Eretz Yisrael, she went to seminary, she worked on herself, and she became a very tzniyistic girl. And there's a very big wedding. And there's going to be a lot of people at this wedding. And she has two dresses to choose from. One dress is provocative. It's not so tzniyistic. But she knows that if she walks in to this wedding with this dress, Every single guy at the wedding, his head's going to turn and look at her. But I went to seminary and I worked on myself, and that's not the girl I am anymore. I don't want every head to turn and look at me. So I'm going to put on this other dress that's not provocative at all, that's very quiet, and nobody's going to see me. But that's what I became, and that's what I'm proud of, and that's what I want to do. And she's sitting there, but I'm already 20, and I need a shidduch, and she's looking back, and she's trying to make a decision, and she's fighting with herself, and the Yetzer Hara is going to say, it's not really not sneeze. It's not so bad, you know, come on, it's a wedding, whatever it is. And she's fighting, and she wins. She wins. And she takes the dress that's sneer stick and she puts it on and she says, I don't care, no one's going to look at me, it doesn't matter, I'm going to the wedding like this. And she's proud of herself and she's happy and she's strong, and you feel good when you make a good decision. You beat the Yetzer Hara. You didn't beat the Yetzer Hara. Because there's a Yetzer Hara melachreha. That's the fight with the Yetzer Hara before the deed. The Yetzer Hara behind you is the Yetzer Hara after the deed. So what happens? She comes to the wedding and she's with all her friends, and there's 10 guys talking to her friend, and there's 5 guys talking to her other friend, and there's 15 guys talking to the other girls in the corner, and nobody's even looking at her. And she's standing in the corner and she's saying, this is what I want. I'm cool. I'm good. I'm good with this. And she's fighting in herself and she's saying, how am I ever going to get married if nobody talks to me, nobody looks at me? And there's this war going on inside. And then she sits down at the table, and her best friend sits down next to her, and she's not dressed, so it's near stick. And she says, Chani, you're not going to believe it. One of those boys, he gave me his phone number. He wants to take me out. And she's sitting there, and she's saying, there's no question, if I would have taken the other dress, I'd have 10 phone numbers. And she feels for a moment remorse. Maybe I made a mistake. And the Yetzer Hara is telling her, you know, for Shidduchim, you're allowed to do anything. Should have put on the other dress. It's a mitzvah. Look, you messed up. You should have put on the other dress. You know, the Yetzer Hara. And he's now, she already made the decision. She already wearing the tzniyah sticker dress. But that doesn't mean the Yetzer Hara gave up. He didn't leave you. Because if he can get you to say that you regret that you did this mitzvah, you lose the mitzvah. So the Yetzer Hara that's behind you is the Yetzer Hara that even after you make the right decision, he wants you to regret that decision. And all of us sitting in this room, or standing in this room, including me, we go through this all the time in our lives, not with dresses, but in many different aspects. We have a job and the boss asks us to cheat, to do something wrong. And we say, I'm not going to do this. And you don't do it. And then you get fired. And you say, you know what? I should have done it. Look how Hashem rewarded me for doing the right thing. Now I got fired. And the other girl that got the job, she's one of your friends. And she's out there making money and buying stuff. And what do they use the word? The Sfardim use the word. They're sketching. You know, this company is sketching everyone. That the TVs and the electronics that they're selling in the basement, right, that they're brand new, and this other girl is sitting there and selling people warranties on this brand new thing, and she's telling her friend, you know how much money I'm making? You should come back. And she goes, you know what? I'm an idiot. I should have never left. Big deal. It's not really cheating, and I really feel bad that I made that decision. Then her whole arcade that she went through, that whole decision, she loses it. And this goes on in our life all the time, that we do mitzvahs and we do good things. And then after that, it looks like we're not getting paid back for it, or we're getting punished for it. And we lose all those mitzvahs. So what happened over here? Akedas Yitzchak. Avram does the biggest mitzvah in the world. A mitzvah that the Satan knew would protect everyone in this room. Thousands and thousands of years later, we stand on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, and Akedat Yitzchak saves Klal Yisrael every single year. And the Satan fought. If you look at the Medrash, the Satan fought Avram. He made a river so Avram shouldn't be able to get to the mountain. He made mountains. He came to Avram and said, what are you doing? You're out of your mind, killing your son. You're a heretic. You're nuts. And he went to Yitzchak and he said, Does it say in the Torah you're allowed to kill a person? Do you realize what's going to happen to your mother? Did you tell your mother where you're going? And he fought with them, and he fought with them, and he lost the Satan. But the Satan said, if I could get Avraham Avinu to regret that he did Akedas Yitzchak, he will lose the whole Akedah. So what did he do? Listen to how smart the Satan is. Sari Imenu did not die because she found out her son was having an Akedah. Sari Imenu was going to die at 127 years, the moment and the day that she died. That is written when you are born. There was no question about it. What did the Satan do? The Satan ran to Sarah and said, guess what's happening? Knowing that the time was ticking, that she's about to die. Oh, Avraham Avinu, look! Look up there, the Medrash says. She went on, there were four giants, Kiryat Arba, there were four giants that were there. That the giant picked her up to see the mountain, and what she saw is that Avraham Avinu with a sword in his hand, and Yitzhak on the Mizbeach, and when she saw that, it says, we're going to see in a minute, Pacha Nishmasa, her soul went out and she died. That's not why she died. That's very wrong, and a very terrible thing, people think, that you could kill Sari Menu, she could have a heart attack because she sees the biggest mitzvah in the world. In fact, one of the great rebbes said that what bothered her the most was, why did they do an Akedah and leave me out? Why wasn't I standing there? The biggest mitzvah in the world, it's my son, why wasn't I part of it? That's what bothered her. Not she died because she saw that. She understood that Hashem, whatever he wants, that's what's supposed to be. That's not why she died. But what did the Satan do? Everyone started talking. Sarah had a heart attack. Sarah had a heart attack. It was all over all the magazines and all the newspapers. Sarah had a heart attack. Sarah found out. Father tries to kill son. Mother dies. Heart attack. The Inquirer. People magazine. All over the place. Great rabbi kills wife by trying to kill son. The whole world is talking about it. Everyone's all excited. So Avraham Avinu had a problem. He walks in and they tell him, you know what you did? You know what you did, Abraham? You killed your wife. Did you hear what happened? She found out that you did the Akedah and she died. You killed your wife. So Avraham Avinu, at that moment, if he would have felt, that's how you repay me? You repay me for the Akedah? I figured I'm going to do the Akedah for the rest of my life. Me and Sarah are going to live honeymoon. Right? First of all, nobody's at home. Yishmael they threw out. Yitzchak's in Gan Eden. Right? A honeymoon couple, Avraham and Sarah. Comes home, his wife's dead. So if he would have had a moment of regret, if I wouldn't have done the Akedah, my wife would still be alive. The whole Akedah would have been totally lost. So now everybody was talking, Avraham Avinu had a problem. If I'm going to sit down now and cry, all the people are going to say, you know why Abraham's crying? Because he realizes he made a mistake. He realizes that he killed his wife by doing this Akedah. And that would show that Avraham Avinu regretted what he did. And if Avraham Avinu regretted what he did, he's going to lose the whole mitzvah. Therefore, Avraham Avinu said, I can't cry. I can't cry. Because if I cry, everyone's going to think I'm crying because I feel bad. I regret the mitzvah. So the first thing he had to do was get up and speak. So before he cried, he had to say a hesped. And he got up and he said exactly what I said here tonight. And he said, I want everyone in this room to know that my wife, the Tsari Menu, was supposed to die at 127 on this night. And the Akedah had nothing to do with it. And I want everyone to know that I don't regret for one second, not for a second, that I did the Akedah. And then says the Pasuk, after he explained that, then he could cry. Why didn't he cry a lot? Because everybody's sitting there and saying, yeah, right. We don't believe you that you have no regrets. Your wife died because of you. So if he would have cried a lot even after the explanation, everybody would have walked away. Yeah, he said it doesn't bother him, but look how he's crying. The guy is totally in tears. He's out of control. He feels bad what he did. So he specifically could only cry a little. He said, I'm only crying because I'm going to miss her. But I'm not going to cry about Akedas Yitzchak. I'm not going to lose that mitzvah that I did. And therefore, there's a small chaf. And therefore, it says, hesped before crying. And therefore, every night before you go to sleep, the most important prayer that you say is the prayer that Hashem, before I go to sleep, don't make me, I don't want to regret anything good I did today. So before a person goes to sleep, we say, V'hasa satamu faneinu. He shouldn't cause me any more trouble tonight. I should taka go to sleep, not go out where I'm not supposed to. But also, V'hasa satam me'achreinu. Before I go to sleep, I'm going to think about, I could have gone here and I could have gone there. And if I would have done this and if I would have done that, my whole life would have been different. And you regret the mitzvah, then you lose the mitzvah. Now everybody in here, after I spoke last night, so someone came to me and says, Rabbi Wallerstein, it can't be true what you're saying. Can't be true that you do a mitzvah, and if you feel bad about a mitzvah, you lose it. Doesn't make sense. A rabbi came to me. Says, how could you get up and say that to these kids? How could you get up and say that if you do a mitzvah, and you feel bad about it, you're going to lose the mitzvah? They're not going to do any mitzvahs anymore. It's a Gemara. I said, Rabbi, I'm really sorry, but it's a Gemara. You should know the Gemara. And it's a Rambam. And I'm going to read it for you inside. But before I read it for you inside, everyone has to now think in their heads of all the things we've done in our life that were good, that we're regretting, because it's affecting our life in many, many, many different ways. How many times somebody came to me and said, if I wasn't Shemin Igiyah, I'd be married. Hello? What does that mean? That means that because you're Shemin Igiyah and you regret that you're Shemin Igiyah, because you're thinking, if I wouldn't be Shemin Igiyah, I'd be married, which is absolutely false and stupid. But on the other hand, you're regretting all those years that you're Shemin Igiyah. You just threw in the garbage because you're saying, I regret that I'm Shemin Igiyah. If I wasn't Shemin Igiyah, I'd be married. And if I would steal, I'd be rich. So all the years that you weren't stealing, you just threw in all the times that someone gave you a chance to make money that was illegal and you didn't, you just threw away. So this happens all the time, and the Yetzer Hara does it all the time. You know, you go to shul, Nebuch, I feel bad for this kid. For 5 years I worked on a kid, he should go to shul. He doesn't go to minyan, he never goes to minyan. He can't get up in the morning. Maybe because there's no girl that calls him, you know, her mitzvah, waking him up in the morning. Maybe that's the problem, I don't know. They don't want alarm clocks anymore, they want girls to call them to wake them up in the morning. Maybe that was his problem, I don't know. But I couldn't get him up in the morning. So finally, I got him. And he said, Rebbe, okay, you got me. This was like a month ago. He got me. I'm going to shul. I'm going to Landau's. 7 o'clock minyan. This guy never in his life, never for the last 3 years, swore the clock between 6 o'clock in the morning and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He didn't know there was a piece of that clock at all. He used to stay out till 6 and sleep till 1. So he didn't know that part of the day didn't exist in his world. 7 o'clock minyan? That means he can't stay out till 6 in the morning, right? Beautiful, excited. I think I finally broke through. What happens, Yetzer Hara? He comes to Landau's, 10 to 7. It's very hard to find parking. And he can't find parking. And it's 5 after 7, and he's missing the minyan. You know, when you make up your mind to make a minyan, right? So there's a bus stop wherever, I don't know where he parked, it's somewhere on M, wherever. There's a bus stop, he said, you know what, I'm going to park at the bus stop. Those brownie traffic guys, they're not out in the morning, right, at 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to park there. He comes out of shul at 8:05, he goes to get his car, and his car is already halfway down Avenue M. His mazel, that morning, the sheriffs are out, right, looking for illegally parked cars that have tickets that aren't paid. Boom! They get his car, $175 for the tow, $150 for the bus stop, all his old tickets. You think he regretted going to shul? Absolutely. Absolutely. He said, Rebbe, my car doesn't move out of my driveway till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. This would have never happened if I didn't go to minyan. I said, this is the big test, man. So you beat the Yetzer Hara last night when you said you're going to minyan. The Yetzer Hara was laughing. Yeah, go to minyan. But wait till you walk out of minyan. Then we're going to see what it's all about. You're going to regret you went to minyan. You wasted your whole time. And this happens all the time. And sometimes in very major ways where Jewish people become Baal Tshuvos and they change their whole life. And all of a sudden they lose their job. And all of a sudden things start going downhill. And all the Yetzer Hara wants is that person should say, why did I become a Baal Tshuva? What do I need this for? It was much better the other way. And they lose all that work that they did to grow where they are. They give it up. Now the question is, why did Hashem do this? And the answer is a share I gave you a long, 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 long time ago. And the answer is that whatever is positive in this world, Hashem creates on the negative side. It has to, everything has to be equal. So God gave us a huge present. He gave us tshuva. You can do an aveira, and then you can regret the aveira, and the aveira is erased. So the Yetzer Hara said, you got to give it to me on the other side. You can do a mitzvah, regret the mitzvah, and the mitzvah is erased. So the power of tshuva from an aveira is the same thing you can do tshuva from a mitzvah. You can do a mitzvah and do tshuva, regret it, and the mitzvah is erased. Now that's pretty out of the box. But it's a Rambam and a Gemara, which we're going to learn inside. There's such a thing as tshuva from a mitzvah. That you could do something right and feel bad about it, and the whole mitzvah is erased. Because Hashem had to create tshuva from an aveira. What do you do more? You do many more aveiras than you do mitzvahs. So we got a good deal. I'll take that deal any day. When Hashem came, and he would ask you, listen, I'm going to create something for you guys and girls that you could do something real bad. But if you regret it, it gets erased. But at the same time, on the other side of the scale, if you do a mitzvah and you regret it, it's also going to be erased. I'll take that deal every day. Because we do a lot more wrong than we do right. And who regrets something you do right? So what are we worried about? So we would take that deal all day. Problem is that we do regret things that we do right. And that's the satan, that's Melachrel, that's the satan that came to Avraham Avinu, that tried to get Avraham Avinu to regret. Now, it's a very hard thing to understand, and that's why I'm very happy that I found the Gemara. The Gemara, I'm going to read it to you for 2 minutes from inside. The Gemara says like this. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, now also I have to tell you something which is even scarier, and that is that right the moment before a person dies, the second before you leave this world, the Satan tries to get the neshama to say, to become totally off the derech, so to say, and to say that he's sorry for wasting his whole life serving God and doing mitzvahs. And the Satan promises the neshama, and this is, I've seen this in many, many sfarim, promises the person that if you will say that there is no God and that you regret all the mitzvahs that you did, I will get you out of your sickness. You'll have a refuah on your deathbed, you'll come back. That's all I want from you. Just say out of your mouth that you regret being the servant of Hashem. And he comes to every single person before he dies and he tries to get them to regret what they did. And that's why you have a minion in the room when a person's dying and you say vidui and you say Shema Yisrael to protect that person for chas v'shalom at the end of their life losing everything that they did, because if they regret their whole life what they did, then the Satan has reason. He's saying, look at you. What kind of God? Where's God? God forbid, a person's dying from cancer. They're on a respirator. They're on all this stuff. He comes and he says, takes you out of your body. You look at your body, and this body on a bed that's suffering. And he says, there's a God? Where's God? Where is he now? Look at you. You got a respirator. You got a tube down your throat. You're being fed by another tube. Look at you. Where's God? I don't see God. Where's your God? Believe in me? Come with me? The tubes are gone. Everything's gone. And Nebuch, many people, shmad the last second of their life. And therefore, to put down, you should look at Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei as much during your life. And there's a tefillah that what HaMelech says, you should daven that the last second of your life, that you go out without repenting on the mitzvahs that you did your whole life. He doesn't give up till the last second, says the Mishnah. He just wants you, and he makes pictures, and he makes you look like you're going to have every enjoyment, like those mishugam, those Arabs who blow themselves up. Who sold them that crazy story? Who do you think sold them that crazy story? It's a Satan. It's the Yetzer Hara. That's who sold them the story. The Havas Chaim brings down a very wild story that there was a Jewish man, and he came to a city, and there was a huge fire in the middle of the city. And he comes to the city, and he sees this old man who's 70 years old, and he's about to jump into the fire. And he says to the old man, what are you doing? He says, in our city, this is a very special fire. You jump into the fire and you get burnt alive. And then, the next night, you come back from the other world to your family, and you're like 40 years old, you're much younger, 40, 70, whatever, you're much younger, and you talk to your family and you tell them all about the next world and where you're going to be. Now this man was a Jewish man, he said, no, 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 this can't be true. And he watched, and this 70-year-old man, Astoy Navas Chaim, jumps into the fire, and he dies. And he's like, what an old fool. That's how they get rid of their old people. And I'm a nursing home. 70, they got them all, someone sold them a story, jump into the fire. It's much easier, right? No social security. So he's standing there, he's laughing. And the family is not crying, there's no funeral, nothing. He says, you guys believe this? So we believe this. In our city, this has been going on for hundreds of years. Tonight, or tomorrow night, come to the table in our house and you will see our father, our grandfather, come back and talk to us. He's like, this can't be. He goes to the house. They're waiting. All of a sudden, there's a knock on the door. The guy walks in. He's much younger. He walks in. He recognizes him. And the Jewish guy sitting at this table is like, this cannot be. And he sits down and he starts talking to Yankel and Schmankel and this guy and that guy. And I was in the other world and it's a great place. And there's anything you want. And he starts telling them all kinds of stories that have nothing to do with good deeds in the next world. That's a bluff and that's baloney. And it's all about just pleasure and pleasure and pleasure. And they're all sitting there and they're like, whoa. And this Jewish guy sitting there is like, what is going on here? Anyway, finally in the morning, the dead man, or now he's a live man, says goodbye to his whole family. He kisses them all. He says, I'm going to the next world. I'll see you when you're 70. And he walks out the door, and the Jew walks out the door with him. And he's like, this cannot be. I'm going to follow him, and I'm going to see where he's going. And he follows him to the middle of the city where this huge fire, where this man jumped in, seems to be burning all the time. And before this young man, who was the old man, jumps into the fire, he turns to the Jewish man and says, so you're Jewish, you don't believe this. He says, of course I don't believe this. Who are you? He says, I'm the Malach HaMavas. He says, what are you doing? He said, hundreds of years ago, I fooled this city to believe that the man comes back. You see this fire in the middle of the city? This is part of the fire of Gehenna that I brought to this world. They're jumping straight into Gehenna. So the Satan has many ways. So then when you hear that these Arabs get on a bus and blow themselves up and kill women and children, forget about Jews in Iraq, Shiites and Sunnis, and the Mamish killing hundreds, thousands of women and children. What is wrong with them? Who sold them the story that they're going to go to heaven for killing other people and they're going to have the best time of their lives in heaven? And all these young Arabs, they jump in. And they blow themselves up. Hard to understand a person blowing themselves up. See, Yetzirah. B'hasa Satan me'achreinu. He comes up with all this stuff. So we have to be very, very careful. And we have to look at everything very, very carefully. And we have to be very careful who we speak to, and who we go to. I said last night to my boys, these people who read palms and tarot readers and all these fortune tellers, these are all people that work from the other side. Oh yeah, they're right. Well, they see the future. The other side, the power of the Shin Dalit is just as much as the power of the Kedusha. You have to find out who is the Rebbe of the person you're going to. And if they don't have a Rebbe, run for your life. Run for your life. If they tell you, God is my Rebbe, that's a sign of a Shin Dalit worshiper. One that says, God is my Rebbe. When I need advice, I go to God. Run for your life. You're not allowed to go to these people unless you know who is your Rebbe. And then you have to find out if that's really their Rebbe and who that Rebbe was. So many girls are running to Mekubalim, 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 Mekubalim. They have no idea who they're getting entangled with. I heard a story this week that I will not repeat. Chas v'shalom. You're not allowed to go to these people unless you know who taught them Kabbalah. Who is your Rebbe? Who do you ask questions to? And then call their Rebbe and find out. Do you have such a student? Who is this student? You can't just go to women who read your palms and read your future. Yes, it's the generation where it came back very strong, our generation, because we're the desperate generation. You don't get married at 19, there's pressure. You're not making money. There's pressure. There's so much pressure. Your kid's a little bit not so doing so good. There's pressure. So read my palm and tell me my future and tell me what's going to happen. Tell me what he looks like and tell me when I'm going to meet him. So the Tzad HaTumah knows that we're desperate. So they sent out all their shluchim. And there are a lot out there. You're not allowed to go to anyone unless you know who their Rebbe, who their teacher is. I myself, I'm telling you this. And I myself went to a person, it was maybe 5 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, to a woman who was a healer. A healer? What could be wrong with a healer? How did she heal? From the good side, from the dark side. So I made up in my mind that before I walk in there, I said, Hashem, how am I going to know? I'm not a Makubal tester. I don't know how to do this stuff. So how am I going to know? So I said into my head, I'm going to do Rabbi Gamliel to him. I'm going to ask her, who's her Rebbe? Who's your Rebbe? Who taught you this healing? Some crazy stuff she does. She wrote 22 books or something. Who taught you this healing? So I walked in. My first question, I sat down. She had a shetel on. She was dressed very tzniyistic. Looked like a big tzedekista. So that's what they do. They know. I said, can I ask you a question before we start this business here, this healing? When you have a question, something you don't understand, who do you ask? She said, the Rambam. I said, the Rambam? He hasn't been here for a while. Then she said the word that hit me right in the heart. She said, when I need him, I can conjure him up. Bad word. When you hear that word, get on your broom and get out. Run for your life. Conjure is a bad word. She conjures, she brings him up, the Rambam. So I'm thinking to myself, hold on a second, the Rambam, he's sitting in the next world next to Hashem. This lady with a shekel on her head says, hey Rambam, I got a question. He comes flying out of Gan Eden into Manhattan. Yes, lady, how can I help you? Something very wrong with that. But I figured, you know what? Don't be too judgmental, Rabbi Wallerstein. But now I'm very nervous. I said, who do you ask your shilas to? In halacha, in law, in Jewish law, who do you ask your questions to? I don't need to ask questions. If I have a question, God gives me the answer. I knew right away what I was dealing with. So you'd think Rabbi Wallerstein would get up and walk out. But it's hard to get up and walk out on somebody. You're insulting them, whatever it is. So the Yetzer Hara is telling me, you can't just get up and walk out. You're insulting the lady. So I started talking to her. So she said, we're not going to really do any healing. I'm just going to show you. She ended up keeping me there for an hour. Terrible. So I shouldn't have been there for 1 minute. Because I told Hashem, this is my test. If she answers me wrong, I'm out of here. She still had the koyach to keep me there for an hour. So if you get an answer, the Rambam, or you get an answer, I don't need a Rav. I have to go to Rav David Feinstein and ask him all my questions. This lady doesn't have smicha, and she didn't sit in Beis Medrash. Why, what do you mean? If she could ask Hashem, then like we could all ask Hashem. So it's just a warning that I gave the boys. You have to be very careful from these people. You have to find out where it comes from, and who is your Rebbe, and then you have to call the Rebbe and say, is this one of your Talmidim? Is he kosher? And if the Rebbe says, who? Who is this? I don't know that name. Don't ever go back. You have to be very, very careful. The Ra, the Satan, comes in many, many, many different shapes. Okay, I got a little bit off the subject. Let me get back on the subject. So the Gemara says the following. And it's a very scary Gemara. But I guess the Gemara knows. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai knew this. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says like this. Afilu tzadik gomer kol yomav. A person who is a perfect tzadik his whole life. Umarad ba'achrayna, but in the last second, he rebelled against God. Ibeid es harishoynais. He has lost all his earlier good deeds, and he is judged as a wicked person. Shenema tzidkas ha-tzadik lo itatz lenu b'yoyim pishoy. The righteousness of the tzadik will not save him at the last day when he sins. But on the other hand, because there has to be two sides, Afilu Russia Gomer Koyamov, even a Russia who has been the worst person his whole life. But also Tshuva Bachraina, and the last second of his life he does Tshuva, Ein Maskirin Leshuv Rishoy. In the next world they will not even remind him of what he did wrong. That's how strong Tshuva is. Like it says in the Pasuk, Virisha HaRasha LaYikashel, the wickedness of the God does not remind him of the weakness any longer. He shall not stumble over it in the day that he repents, the last moment of his life. Okay. So the Gemara asks a question. And the Gemara is going to ask the following question. The Gemara is going to say, why do you have to say that it says the last second of his life, if he does an Aveira, he loses all his mitzvahs? Let's just say that the last second of his life, his scale was exactly even, and he did one more Aveira at the last second of his life, so that side of the scale went down, so therefore he's going to go to Gehenna, but he doesn't lose all his mitzvahs. The mitzvahs on the good side of the scale, they're still there. So the Gemara asks, just say that he keeps half his mitzvahs. So the Gemara ends and says, Amar Rosh Lakish, Rosh Lakish says, B'toyeh ala rishaynais, one who regrets everything he did previously correctly, he is the one who loses all his mitzvahs that he's ever done. So from the Gemara, it's mashma, from the Gemara it sounds like that you do lose all your mitzvahs. Which is very, very scary, because somebody asked me a great question, one of the boys, and he said, what happens if you regret that you regretted doing the mitzvah? Does that fix everything? In other words, you did a mitzvah, and you went home from the wedding, and you said, you see, I should have worn that other dress. Oh yeah, I regret I didn't put on the other dress. Now you lost the mitzvah, then you say, but now I really feel bad that I felt bad that I did the mitzvah. So now you get back the mitzvah. I don't know. It's a double regret, a double negative, maybe it's a positive. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. I want to read you the Rambam. Listen carefully. Kol mi shenichem ala mitzvahs, anyone who feels bad on the mitzvah she'asa that he did, v'tol ala zchuyos, v'amah b'libo, and he says in his heart, ma ha'aleisi, girls, did you ever say this in your heart? Listen carefully, the Rambam is brilliant, and I did not conjure him up. He wrote this in his sefer. And he says the following, V'omar b'libo, a person who says in his heart, Ma ha'aloisi ma'asisam, what good did being good do for me? Listen to the Rambam. How many times do we ask ourselves, what good did it do? I was good, and look how I got paid back for it. Halavai loyosisi oisam. Halavai, I didn't do this. Says the Rambam, Hareze Ibad is kulam, he loses all those mitzvos. The Ein Maskirim Lo Shum Zchus Ba'olam, and they won't remind him of any merit forever. And he quotes the pasuk. And he says, on the other hand, if a person did Averis his whole life, and he feels repentant, he feels bad and regret that he did the Averis, then all those Averis will be erased. So the scary part is that means that as strong as tshuva is to erase our mitzvos, our averos, tshuva is to erase your mitzvos. So I thought about it tonight before I gave the shir and yesterday. But how can you stop regretting something? It's like a thought. It's not something you can control. You know, you didn't go out with your friends, and they went out, and they had a great time, and they call you up, and they say, oh, if you would have just been with us, you don't know who we met. You're human. You're like, oh man, I should have gone. You know? How do you stop that? That's not fair. And did you take away my whole night that I stayed at home because I felt that way? So you have to work on lilifneha to protect the achreha. You have to work on the fight before. You have to understand that by beating the satan and making that decision, that is so much fun. That is such a great testament to you, to how strong you were and how powerful you were. You have to focus on the lefaneh. How did I say no? I am a free girl. My friends aren't free. They can't say no. No is freedom, not yes. No means you're free. A person who can say no means they're free. A person who can say no to a cigarette and no to negia and no to drugs and no to anything in their life that's good for them to say no. If you can say it, you're free. So you need to focus on, I made a decision. I'm a free person. And I'm proud of that. And if that's how you start the mitzvah, then when he shows up later, he doesn't have a chance. But if you start the mitzvah with, I don't know which dress, and you walk in and you're still besuffic, then the Allah Akhra, he's gonna kill you. You're gonna feel so bad. And it happens, you can write down a piece of paper after tonight's share. By next week, Wednesday, you will write down, I can tell you, you can write down 50 times in the next week that you did something good, right? And you felt regret. because you got smacked right in the head for it. And you did something great and everyone else had fun, or you did something great and it looks like you got punished for it. Like last week, Leah with Dina, who ended up getting two tribes. So this week's parsha, that little chaf, is my whole share tonight. A little teeny chaf. The little chaf is Avraham Avinu showing, I'm not crying about doing the good deed. I'm crying about my wife dying. From one little chaf, everyone thinks you learn a lot from the big letters in the Torah. You learn a lot, like a little aleph in Vayikra and a little chaf here. You learn a lot from the little letters in the Torah. And from this chaf, we learn a very important lesson. And that lesson is not chas v'shalom to ever regret doing a mitzvah. I want to end with a story with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, exactly on this subject matter. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, there was somebody on the east side who in the times, in the 20s and the 30s, used to get fired. I think I said this a few weeks ago. Used to get fired every Shabbos. Every Shabbos got fired. In those days in America, you worked a week, you didn't show up Saturday, they knew you were a Jew, they fired you. So a lot of people went to shul, the Hashkama Minyan, I told you this. The 7 o'clock Minyan was created in America so people can go to shul and then drive to work. So Hasidim don't go to Hashkama Minyan. They won't go. Because the whole Hashkama Minyan was created so you can go to work. So they have an excuse to go to 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock Minyan because you can't go to Hashkama Minyan. But it works, fine. But you can go to the Vesika Minyan, that everybody allows. But the Hashkama Minyan...